Hey everybody, my name is Davis Buchanan, and I want to welcome you to the podcast where we discuss famous people and the names they share with people who might actually deserve to be the famous one. That's right, this is I'm Not Adam West, and joining me as always is my co-host, Adam West. All right, Adam, how you doing today?
I'm good, man, I'm good. Got done working a few days on set for a comedy short that some friends of mine are producing, so I'm a little tired, I'll be honest, 12-hour nights, going off a little sleep on this one, but pretty good, you know, it's fun to get back on set and do things, and no matter what the capacity is, so, yeah.
That's awesome. What's the premise of the short?
So it's kind of a weird take between... I think the heavy influences are like Parks and Recreation and like LA noir films.
Okay.
So it's called Campus Heroes, and it's basically about these two cops who are, I'd imagine like hall cops or hall monitors and, elementary school, whatever, just on the college level. And so, we did a pretty big fight scene between some vandalizers of a car and the main two guys. So, it was really fun, really fun, really fun people to be around. So yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
It sounds a little bit like, a comedy short or like a short version of 21 Jump Street, like that series a little bit,
yeah.
Obviously not without the undercover elements, but that sort of same vibe.
Yeah, exactly. It was, I would say that's a good comparison. There's a little bit more, As we're filming, they were like, "Hey, we want to do it in like bring in some anime influences," and
okay.
So not necessarily seeing anime, but like some of the shot styles are just like, "Let's get a really close up of the face, and let's get a quivering hand that's just like, you know, the exaggerated things and whatnot." So
that's good.
Yeah, so it was pretty great. So what about you, man? How you been?
I've been good. I've been very good. It's our second to last week of camp. Last week is the last week of camp, so that's kind of crazy.
Nice.
It seems like it's flown by.
Yeah.
In Dallas this week, been hanging out, ate a bunch of chicken tikka masala today, which is my current favorite food on the planet. So that's always good. Doing this with a full belly of spicy Indian food is wonderful.
What do you like so much about it?
Dude, I don't know. And it's not like I hadn't had Indian food until about a year ago. It was the first time I really ever had it at a place. I mean, you might have been Teji's in Austin. Who have been there? It's like by campus.
Maybe. Doesn't ring a bell.
I had it there. I was visiting a buddy of mine, Richard Dussold, in case he's listening. What's up, dude? He introduced me and I loved it there. And then I had it another time after we went to Big Bend, like in March, and then found this place close by my parents' house that I'm a huge fan of. And I don't know what I honestly don't know. I mean, I like spicy food, but it's not that it's that spicy. It's just it's very good. Also, it's hard to go wrong with garlic naan, just a big flat piece of bread with a lot of garlic on it that you can't like. Who doesn't love that?
Yeah.
And then dunking that in a bunch of tomato-y, spicy curry sauce is wonderful.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, that sounds great. Are you you ready for camp to be wrapped up? Or?
Yeah. It'll be really sad to see my team, spread out and go their separate ways back to school or to jobs or whatever. I've loved getting to know them, get to hang out with them. They are awesome. They're really, really fun to be around. So that'll be a bummer, but it will be nice for the pace of life to slow down.
Nice.
To chill a little bit. Landon and I are going to the beach right after camp ends, and then I've got a week off of work on top of that. And so my life will slow down a ton, which will be great. Right when your life gets wacko crazy, because you're going on a big trip, Adam.
Yeah. So this might be our last recording before I leave for Australia. But yeah, we're going to Australia for 2 weeks, and so Australia and New Zealand. So I'm gonna tell them all about the Peter Jacksons and other people.
You gotta tell every single person that you meet has to know. You have to take note cards, laminate them, and keep them in your pocket. And anytime somebody asks you where you're from or what you do, you redirect them to the Peter Jackson episode of our podcast.
Yeah, this is what I do. Hopefully I'll meet a Peter Jackson, because there seems to be a plethora of them down there. So who knows, I might
just
run into a few.
You need to take an iPod shuffle and only upload that episode of our podcast and just put the earbuds in people's ears.
Yes.
Don't even say anything when they ask you questions. Just put them in their ears and start playing it.
I love it.
Adam, this probably comes as no surprise at this point, but I have a question I need to ask you.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right. I would love for you to try to guess where the correlation is between the Barnett effect, Oregon newspapers, and a purple lightsaber.
Man, if you say purple lightsaber, you can only be referring to Samuel L. Jackson.
Adam, you're correct. Samuel Jackson. That's who we're talking about today here on this episode of I'm Not Adam West. We're going to talk about Samuel Jackson, the one that we all know. We're going to talk about some Samuel Jacksons that we may not know as well. And we're going to talk about whether any of those Samuel Jacksons deserve to be the famous one.
Yeah. So Samuel Jackson, I don't know if you got to look at him just personally, but we all know him. I mean, he's appeared in over 100 films, so I had no idea, really?
Yeah, over 100?
Over 100, so you'd pretty much be actively trying to avoid him if you, if you're any kind of movie watcher, you've seen Samuel L. Jackson. So he was born in Washington, D.C. in 1948, born Samuel Leroy Jackson. So he was born in Washington, D.C., but he grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, so my state. And
nice.
Yeah, so he attended several segregated schools and graduated from Riverside High School in Chattanooga. So learned to play a lot of different musical instruments, was very talented in that aspect, including like the flute and the piccolo. Interesting thing I found out about him was, so during his childhood, he had a stuttering problem.
Huh.
And so apparently whenever, like, to help him get rid of this stutter, he would pretend to be other people, which is
funny.
Not obviously a far shot off from what he does now. So
yeah.
I wonder if that played into, you know, his enjoyment for acting, because he did originally intend to pursue a degree in marine biology.
No way.
Yeah. So he Morehouse College in Atlanta is where he graduated.
Yeah, totally.
And he took a few classes with a local acting group, he joined a local acting group to kind of gain some extra point in the class and really enjoyed it. So a few things, I mean, let's get into his movies real quick. He's Frozone. He's Jules.
Wait, is he really Frozone?
Wait, did you not know this?
Yeah, I don't think I actually realized that was Samuel Jackson.
Oh, what?
Samuel
yes, Jackson. He is Frozone from The Incredibles.
I saw the second one, too, like not that long ago. I don't think I've ever known that that's who that is.
Yeah, so he plays that. Wow, that's crazy that you didn't know that.
I'm not playing that up. I genuinely didn't know that.
Oh, that's funny. He's pretty synonymous with a lot of things, which is kind of cool. So he was in at least 3 Quentin Tarantino films. You have Pulp Fiction, which might be one of his most famous roles. The Hateful Eight, Jackie Brown. And so, again, like, just if you've seen movies, you've seen this guy. He's very predominant in the Marvel series. He plays Nick Fury in a lot of those. He plays, obviously, Mace Windu and the Star Wars films or Star Wars prequel trilogy. He also plays an Inglourious Basterds, so that's 4 Quentin Tarantino's. Iron Man, all of those. He was in Coach Carter, was another big role for him. As well as a bunch of small films, not small, I suppose, but just like a lot of random films. I mean, he was in Black Saint Moan, which was really good. He just kind of played a lot of roles, and so, I mean, again, 100 roles, like he's been in a lot. So
been in a ton, and I think my favorite role of his probably is in Unbreakable. I would say it's got to be my favorite one.
Okay.
And coming out soon is Glass, in which he will reprise that role. So be on the lookout for that.
Okay, yeah, I haven't seen it. I actually was talking about it yesterday, and was like, I need to watch this movie. So
yeah, you do. It's so good.
Yeah. So he is Guinness World Book of Records has him as the highest grossing actor of all time.
Wow.
I think they said his movies were up in the like $4.1 billion grossing.
Holy smokes.
That's probably higher, because I mean, it's got to be higher. I know that at least 2 Marvel films have hit at least one has hit 100 million or something like that. So man, my favorite of Samuel Jackson's role, man, Pulp Fiction probably does it for me.
Yeah
He's just, that movie's so good, and his just iconic line, "Say my name." He's just so good. Interesting fact about that, he had his wallet that has a for BMAF. That is also on the hilt of the lightsaber in Star Wars.
I had no idea. That's very funny.
Yeah. So aside from his movie credentials, he actually is pretty involved in civil rights. So this is pretty cool. When Martin Luther King Jr., after he was assassinated, Jackson attended the funeral as one of the ushers.
Wow.
Yeah, cool. I did not know that. So yeah, he's very involved during that time. He was employed as a social worker for a while in Los Angeles. And so, and he is like kind of remained prevalent in that. So yeah, just kind of a fun guy. Obviously, just like fun to watch. I enjoy most of the movies I see him in, just because he has he's known for his like kind of like deep tonal voice.
Yeah.
You know, and just like his mannerisms. So yeah.
He's got some crazy mannerisms. He's kind of a psycho. He's like kind of a psycho to watch on screen in a good way. But he's kind of nuts.
In a good way, for sure. So, okay. So that's Samuel L. Jackson, Davis.
That's awesome. Okay. I have a couple of lesser known Samuel Jacksons, a couple of short bios that I want to get into if you're ready for them.
Yeah, let's hear them.
Okay, perfect. There is one Samuel P. Jackson. There are a couple Samuel P. Jacksons, I feel like, but this Samuel P. Jackson was born in 1818 in Manchester, England. And then he actually died in Brooklyn in 1885. But he was an organist and a composer. His dad, James Jackson, was an organ builder. And his family immigrated to the United States when he was 7 years old in 1825. Samuel learned how to build organs. And then he had some music teachers and ended up playing for about 12 years. He played the organ at St. Clement's Church. After that, he played at St. Bartholomew. Later, he played at Christ Church, the Church of the Ascension, and the Anthon Memorial Church. He taught piano, organ, and harmonium, and he basically made a couple of books of music and kind of some popular volumes of organ sort of notes and teaching people how to play the organ. So kind of a cool Samuel Jackson. The next one is also Samuel P. Jackson. There's a fun crossover here of an earlier episode we've done. This is Sam Peter Jackson. We get a double feature here. We should have featured him on the Peter Jackson episode and brought him back here, but we missed our chance. We really did miss it.
Well, that was like episode 2, right? So we're
that's true.
We've learned so much. Fair. We're episode 8 now, so
we're at episode 8 and we're brilliant at this. This is Sam Peter Jackson. He was born in 1978. He's still alive, still working. He's a playwright and an actor. His kind of best known play is called Public Property, which ran in London in the West End in 2009. Was nominated for a few awards. He also wrote and co-directed the short film Charity, which won Best Comedy at the 2012 Crystal Palace International Film Festival. Okay. And he also wrote and directed a short film called The Bathroom, which starred a Laurence Olivier Award-winning actress, Janie D, and had music by Grammy Award-winning composer David Arnold. So he definitely has some fun connections, or at least he knows people that are excellent in their field to be in some of his works. He has a few other plays, Minor Irritations, Charity, Where I Used to Live, produced by London Theatre Companies, and then a play called Icarus, which was produced by Mind the Gap Theatre in New York. He also co-wrote and presented a Channel 4 documentary called The Other Michael Jackson, Battle of the Boogie, a documentary about his own father, Mick Jackson, who is the other Michael Jackson. So maybe, Adam, we've got some content for a future episode.
Okay.
That's exactly what we do. So, anyway, we might get to that later. Maybe you'll see Mick Jackson pop up later. But Variety magazine once described Sam Peter Jackson as a writing talent to watch. So someone to keep track of if you're interested in plays or short films. Seems like he is moving and shaking and kind of doing some good stuff in those arenas.
Okay, that's cool. I like that guy. Can I go ahead and give you my first one?
Yes, I would love to hear about your Samuel Jackson.
Okay, so I have a Samuel Jackson Barnett.
Okay.
So this is an American physicist who was born 1873. And so in 1894, he received a BA in physics and later received his PhD from Cornell University. He worked heavily in the field of electromagnetism. He discovered what is known now as the Barnett effect. So the Barnett effect basically says an uncharged object rotating with angular velocity tends to spontaneously magnetize.
Okay, interesting. I have no idea what that means, but it sounds tight.
And my head, magnetization occurs parallel to the axis it spins on.
Adam, what does that mean?
Oh, man, I don't know. This is over
my head.
Break
it down
head.
For me.
I wish I could. I should
have. Do we know any physicists? Who can we call? Do we have anyone at NASA?
I feel like physics is always what puts us on our edge of like, oh.
Dang, I got to get other friends.
Barnett was motivated by a prediction by Owen Richardson in 1908. So, physicists before him, and his effect was called the Edison de Hondt effect.
Okay.
Which is a phenomenon which a change in the magnetic moment of a free body causes the body to rotate. So basically magnetizing this still thing would cause it to rotate. And he suggested that instead of that spinning a ferromagnet could change its magnetization. And he established this effect with a long series of experiments from 1908 to 1915. So spent a lot of time just researching this and figuring out how it worked. And so he's published three different works: Elements of Electromagnetic Theory, Theories of Magnetism, and La Magnetisme. Yeah, so pretty smart guy. Seems to have done a lot of yielding work in his own field.
There you go. Okay. Very tight. That's interesting. I wish that I knew how to interpret those things better, so I really could grasp the full effect of what this guy has done and how he's kind of added to the scientific field. But, I'm sure that he has increased our knowledge in a very meaningful way. But I will leave it to other people to determine those things, and I'll stick with podcasting on the side and running day camp. That's what I'll do. How about that?
Yeah, he has a PhD in this, and we have Wikipedia. So,
and we have, that's true. So. We have a Wikipedia PhD. That's what I say. All right, can I tell you about Samuel Jackson?
Yes, please do.
Great. I would love to tell you about Samuel Jackson, who was a British artist. He was an English artist. He was born in 1974, and he was a watercolorist and oil painter most of his work was centered around Bristol.
Bristol, England, or Bristol,
yes.
North Carolina?
Bristol, England, the city and county, like in southwest England. And so he did a lot of drawings and watercolors of that town. He was born actually on New Year's Eve, which is kind of fun, 1794. Okay. His dad was an accountant and a dry salter. This is a little tangent, but I don't know what a dry salter was, so I looked it up. And dry salters, they dealt in chemical products, glue, varnish, dye, colorings, sometimes salt, as the name would suggest, or chemicals for preserving food. And sometimes they actually sold food like, you know, salted meat or pickles or things like that. So anyway, kind of interesting. I learned something. You learn something new every day, and you learn something new all the time when you do a podcast like this one. His dad was a dry salter. And by 1822, so by the time he was like 28 years old, he was a professional artist. Samuel Jackson was. He painted landscapes, and then he was elected in 1823 as an associate member of what was then called the Society of Painters in Watercolors, which is what is now called the Royal Watercolor Society, which is it's still an organization in existence. It's an English institution of painters that work in watercolors. So they still use this organization today. They're elected artists are elected into this organization half a dozen people join every year. So it's a pretty selective group, but it's been around since 1804. So,
okay. Do you think that be inducted into this, they do like a black garb ritual and they just paint your face with watercolors?
They might paint your face. They might give you one of those little spiral notebooks with all the paints like on the edge of the back cover.
Yeah.
That's how I was inducted into this society. That's why I know so much about it. Because I did one of those and I painted a turtle. And it was very good. And it's on my mom's fridge. That's how good it is. So
with a nice little magnet.
It's got a nice little magnet. It's also a turtle on the magnet. So it's very thematic. So anyway, he was elected a member of what was, again, then called the Society of Painters and Watercolors. And he essentially became the founder of, lots of people have called him the father of the Bristol School. And the Bristol School was a kind of movement in English art that was applied retroactively. It wasn't something that people were necessarily trying to achieve, but it was an informal association and a bunch of the works of a group of artists in Bristol in the early 19th century. So this guy kind of started this up. And this movement kind of in Bristol affected and influenced several different artists in different you know, capacities over the, you know, 1810 to 1840, kind of that range. But the style was, it's landscapes, but it's sort of this exaggerated, almost fantastical version of landscapes. So they're big, they're sweeping, they are landscapes. So they're true to the landscape, but it's sort of this, again, exaggerated, they exaggerated the characteristics of the landscapes that they're painting. So it's really pretty. If you haven't, if you don't know about the Bristol School, I would encourage you to give it a Google. The landscapes that are painted are really striking. He started introducing West Indian subjects into his art, so he may have visited the West Indies later on in his life, may have visited Switzerland. We don't know a lot about his personal life, but some of these influences, West Indian subjects, mountain scenery, Devon and Wales, kind of some other things started getting mixed in with his Bristol landscape. So maybe he was a little more traveled than we think. And then his son, who also was named Samuel Jackson, there's not a lot of information about him, but that was Samuel Phillips Jackson. Another Samuel P. Jackson was a landscape and marine painter as well. So he kind of carried on, his son carried on this idea of wanting to paint landscapes and being a painter. So during his life, Samuel Jackson was commissioned by a man named George Weir Breckinridge, who commissioned him to produce about 30 watercolors, but collected a lot more of Jackson's Bristol scenes. And so all those works of art made it into the Breckinridge collection, which I believe is still in existence. And basically, all of this combined makes Bristol's early 19th century appearance, like the way that Bristol looked in the early 19th century, it is one of the best documented of any English city. So really, Samuel Jackson, through his work and the work of his people, sort of preserved this town, this county, and the way that it looked in a period of time, preserved it for history because of all the work that he did, kind of focused on this town, and the fact that he was, you know, commissioned by this man who then preserved it in a collection. We have a really, really good idea of what Bristol looked like, 200 years ago. Because of this guy's work. So that collection, it is still around. It is in the Bristol City Museum and Art Gallery. So if you're ever around Bristol, I would encourage you to go check out that art gallery, the museum, and go see this stuff by Samuel Jackson. I just think that's super interesting that he, one, an impact on art in general, but two, he's like created this space where we can go and experience what Bristol looked like in a very real but very evocative way, even 200 years later. So thought it was really, really cool.
Okay. That's awesome, Davis. How about we take a break? Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to our podcast. We just wanted to stop and mention if you or someone you know shares a name with a famous person, we'd love to know. You can reach out to us on inawcast@gmail.com. That's inawcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching inawcast. Like, share, subscribe. Really, anything helps us get our podcast out there. So please tell your friends, review, and enjoy the rest of the episode.
Adam, I would love to know what other Samuel Jackson you have lined up for us today.
I have Samuel Jackson, who is a lawyer and a solicitor. And so when I first heard solicitor, I thought that's not the same word that I think it should be. So I looked it up. And so in English, solicitor is basically a person who takes people who have large amounts of money, estates, and they will put those to good use, basically. Yeah. You know. So I didn't know that until now. So
there you go.
But Samuel Jackson was born in 1831 in Providence Green near Yorkshire, England.
Okay.
So he studied law at the University of York and then joined what's known as the Inner Temple. Have you ever heard of this, Davis?
No.
Okay, so the Inner Temple is kind of cool. It is actually founded by the Knights Templar.
Oh, wow.
Yes. To my understanding of how the Inner Temple works, it is a professional body that provides legal training to its members. And so you have to be basically invited, inducted into this, and but they will help train you as a barrister or a judge in London. And so in an action called to be called to the bar is basically what it means. And so he was called to the bar and became a member of this, and then he moved to, do you want to guess where he moved to?
Tell me.
He moved to New Zealand.
Oh, back to New Zealand. Never can get away from New Zealand.
I know, man. There's such a thing here. So But he moved to New Zealand in 1855, where he actually was on the ship where he would meet his wife and eventually become married. So they arrived in Auckland. 2 weeks into this, he walked to the Supreme Court and was admitted as an attorney and solicitor there. So kind of quickly took impact on the culture that or the environment. The community that he was in. Yeah. And so he worked with a man named Frederick Merriman first. And where they created a firm together. And once he died, he joined a firm with a guy named James Russell, and they kind of they changed their name to Jackson and Russell, the firm of Jackson and Russell. So, but the cool things about him, so he worked a little bit in politics as a lawyer, but really his professional life took more of a meaning in the estates that he would kind of bequeath upon people and what he would do in that area of his life. So, says he advised many rich benefactors. And so the one of the this came up several times where one of his benefactors, John Edward Elm, asked him to find a suitable place to leave his estate to, and Jackson actually suggested creating a fine arts school. He said that that was needed, and so the result created the Elm or the Elam School of Fine Arts.
Okay.
And so this is, again, something that would happen more and more. A man named Edward Costley had no relatives and actually proposed to leave his wealth to Jackson and his kids.
Interesting.
And to which Jackson replied, "I'm cozy. Leave it to Auckland." So he very much
there you
was...
go. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. It was very much like wanted to establish... you know, wealth and generosity toward the community. So from that one estate, seven charities were able to benefit from that man's contributions. And so including a hospital and other buildings. So in the last case was James Dilworth, who bequeathed the bulk of his estate to a tuition institute trust, which established the Dilworth School later on. So he is known as basically being the father of soliciting in Auckland. Just a lot of contributions came out of this. He died in 1930 in his residence and left several children, in which one was the founder of the auctioneering business.
Okay.
I don't know if this means was the auctioneering business as it's seen in New Zealand, but it said that he was the founder of that. So I thought that was interesting. So so that's Samuel Jackson, just like a man who clearly cared about his community and wanted to help grow it in any situation. So I would be curious to see how many people in Auckland. And again, when I go to Auckland, I'm definitely going to look at this and try to find some of these schools, because it would be really neat to see how the things that he has helped, you know, had a hand in creating are still around today.
Yeah, absolutely. New Zealand, as we know it, as you experienced it in a couple weeks, may not be the same if it had not been for Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
If you do find it, if you do get a photo of it or something, you should absolutely do that, and then we should post it up on the social media, because that would be really fun.
Yeah, for sure.
You got to check it out.
You have one more for us, Davis?
I do have one more for us. I have Samuel Jackson, who is a new newspaper publisher, which doesn't sound... you know, like the coolest or most daring of professions, but I'm a big fan of the things that Sam Jackson did, kind of what he was able to accomplish, even as a newspaper publisher. So Sam Jackson, his name was Charles Samuel, or Sam Jackson, I went by Sam. He was born in 1860 and he died in 1924, and he was a prominent newspaper publisher in Oregon. So he actually has had a lot of effect on Oregon itself, specifically Portland. And so Portland, Oregon was impacted a lot by Jackson, both in the newspaper field, but also politically. And we'll get to that in a second. But Jackson was actually born in Deltaville, Virginia, which is right on the coast, far, far, far east coast. It's like an hour and a half east of Richmond, like directly east of Richmond. So it's way out there.
Farther away from Portland.
I mean, just about as far away from Portland as you could possibly get. Newport News is over there, which is one of my favorite towns in the world. I've recruited there for camp for a couple years now, or I did, going to Christopher Newport University, and I love it there. Okay. I'm a huge fan. That's my random love for that part of the world. But I love that school. I love that part of the world. It's really, really fun. So anyway, random connection. But he moved from Deltaville, Virginia to Pendleton, Oregon. He was in 1880. He was part of the Go West Young Man. He was 5-0 goes west. That whole scenario, like he went out west and he had a trippy experience with an eagle and some racist, you know, some jokes. Just kidding. That's just the movie. So he goes west and he sets up in Pendleton, Oregon, and he did a couple of things when he get there. He went there when he was just barely 20. He had just turned 20 and he had no formal training, but he went to go work as, you know, a printer and a publisher. That's what he wanted to do. And so he actually bought the Pendleton-based newspaper East Oregonian, became its publisher in 1882. So he would have been, 22 years old. He becomes this publisher of a paper and actually developed it into a pretty successful regional paper. So he takes the East Oregonian, turns it into kind of a successful paper. It is still around. It actually won the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association General Excellence Award every year since 2011. It's won that award. So it was established in 1875. And then, you know, was it like 15 years later? Not even that many, like 7 years later, it was taken over by Sam Jackson. He established it and it's around today.
Oh, cool.
In 1886, he got married to a woman named Maria Clopton, who was also originally from Virginia, funnily enough. They had two sons, Francis C. and Philip L. Jackson. And then in 1902, some people in Portland persuaded him to sell the East Oregonian and move to Portland to basically revive this failing newspaper there called the Portland Evening Journal. So okay. Really in, you know, 10 years, he had so much success with the East Oregonian that at 32 years old, he's convinced to come and take over a newspaper in Portland. So, he took over the Portland Evening Journal. It was renamed the Oregon Daily Journal, and then later on the Oregon Journal. And so then at that point, the journal actually found a lot of success being the main competitor to another daily paper in Portland, the Oregonian. So you have the Oregonian, which is Republican leaning, and then he established the Oregon Journal, which was Democratic leaning and became kind of the main competitor. So those are the two big newspapers in Portland. Cool. On July 23rd, 1902, he declared that, and I quote, "The journal in head and heart will stand for the people, be truly democratic and free from political entanglements and machinations, believing in the principles that the promise, the greatest good to the greatest number, to all men, regardless of race, creed, or previous condition of servitude. It shall be a fair newspaper and not a dull and selfish sheet." So he very clearly had some idealistic and aspirational goals for the Oregon Journal. For, you know, 80 years, it was this prominent, long-running newspaper that was kind of turned around and founded by Sam Jackson. A couple of facts about Sam Jackson that are interesting, too. He was inducted into the Oregon Newspaper Hall of Fame in 1979. So he's in there. There's a little blurb about him on the Oregon News Hall of Fame kind of their page. Apparently, he was also involved in insurance, real estate, and loan operations. But not only that, but during his tenure in the Oregon Journal, he helped the journal, the newspaper, campaign politically for, and here's a list of things that he wanted: better streets, pure milk for Oregon, Portland's bridges, dry docks, the dredging of the Columbia, the opening of Portland as a major world port, better control of Oregon timberlands, promoting the initiative petition, and then several different other political things. And kind of he and his newspaper helped campaign for a political structure the way that Portland does a lot of its, like, the not necessarily the governor, but the kind of the city politics. This is the way the city infrastructure is structured. It comes out of his campaigning, and it still operates the same way today. So he impacted his community, not just through the newspaper, but he actually impacted it politically as well. So if you're in Portland, if you live in Portland, if you've been there, probably to some degree, that town, that city was bettered or at least pushed forward in progress by Sam Jackson and by his family. So just kind of a cool, interesting idea. I've never been to Portland. I would love to visit the Pacific Northwest. It's like definitely on my bucket list, kind of the next area that I would love to go travel to. But now it's kind of fun. If I go to Portland, I've got some historical background. I can go see, you know, Sam Jackson or Jackson Tower. I can go see Oregon Health and Science University and know some of the history behind that, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Wow. Yeah, it's good to see how much he actually did for Portland there. So, okay, Davis, I got to ask. Do you like any more than Sam Jackson?
Man, that's a tough one. I think that, I mean, honestly, this last one I just talked about, Portland guy is really cool. I think what he did for Portland is fun. Honestly, if there's one that I think that I'm like, man, I wish not necessarily do I think that he deserves more recognition, but that I wish there was more recognition, was the English painter, Samuel Jackson, the one who did a lot of painting. I really honestly just like, I'm a big fan of his art. I want to look more at it. Like I want to continue to dive into some of his works and definitely love his art style. But I think even just the fact that he preserved this place in the world for a period of time for us to experience the way that he experienced it, and that he impacted several of the artists around him. I love that. I'm a huge fan of it, and I wish that I'd never heard of him before, and I think that's silly. I think that I wish that he had more recognition. I'm glad that he got some exposure here today.
That's good enough, but still,
I think Sam Jackson's been in 100 movies. He was really, I mean, he's been in a ton of different roles, and he's a good actor. And I think just his exposure, I don't know that I can discredit him or say that he shouldn't be the most famous one.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
As far as like impact, community impact, he's right alongside those guys. I think with, you know, being involved in civil rights, and I had no idea he was at Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral, and so it's not like he hasn't been involved in his community either. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that stuff does push him over the edge for me. I mean, he's campaigned for Barack Obama during his election in 2008, still very active and social politics and whatnot. So I think it's Samuel L. Jackson, and so I don't know. Just love him. I think he does cool things. I mean, his if you hear his voice, well, I would say this, but apparently not everyone can just hear his voice and
right
know that
yeah
it's him.
Apparently I am living proof of that, and now I'm embarrassed. Thanks for reminding everybody of that.
Yes, but I just think that he's cool. Like it's cool to see how much he has actually impacted the people around
Absolutely.
Him and whatnot. So, yeah. So, but I think that's. You got anything else?
I don't have
else?
Anything else. That's all I've got.
We'd like to thank Broke for Free for letting us use their song "Luminous." Hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.